This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
If Florida State, we win national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something, I can really do this.
And welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, we're going to be talking a little bit about the Dalvin Cook exoneration and what it's going to mean for Florida State to have him back. And then after that, we're going to talk about the end of fall camp, the second scrimmage, and some of the things that we know at this point going into the season, looking at some strengths and weaknesses and what we're going to have to look at there. So first things first, the Dalvin Cook exoneration. I mean, what is there to say? A 23-minute verdict from the jury. And if you've ever served on a jury before, it can take 23 minutes to select a foreman on the jury. I mean, this case was so cut and dry from a legal perspective. It really is a shame that it had to go to trial. And there's no doubt why it went to trial. I mean, we all understand the reasons for that. This is Willie Meggs making sure that his legacy is not tarnished, making sure that no Florida State player there's ever any impression that a Florida State player might be getting off or getting special treatment because he's a Florida State player, to the point that Florida State players, I'm looking at you, Travis Johnson, who I think you probably still hold the record for the fastest jury trial in Tallahassee history. Travis Johnson, if for those of you who don't remember, Travis Johnson, who was a former teammate of mine back in the early 2000s, Travis Johnson was charged by Willie Meggs with sexual assault, and it took an all-female jury 15 minutes to come back with a not guilty verdict against Travis Johnson. That case was so cut and dry. Again, another case that never should have even gone to trial. Which, by the way, again, for those of you who are listening, and this is how remarkably bad the case against Jameis Winston was in terms of sexual assault. If Willie Meggs didn't bring charges against Jameis Winston after what we've seen with him, with Travis Johnson, with this Dalvin Cook case and all of that, that tells you exactly what he thought of that case. So, I mean, because he's been willing to bring cases that were unwinnable to trial just because they were Florida State athletes, and he has said on the record before that athletes should be held to a higher standard, and that, you know, they need to, even if it's just going through a trial and that sort of thing, that they need to understand the implications, the repercussions of their actions. So, you know, this is a Willie Meggs special, and you know the evidence was pretty clear. There was no way that they were going to get a judgment against Dalvin Cook with what they had. Essentially, what you had was two heavily intoxicated young ladies claiming that a Florida State player, a 215-pound running back, 210-pound running back, punched one of them in the face, resulting in a minor split lip, which in itself is interesting. No bruising, no real bruising or any sort of swelling of that or anything of that nature, which is why the investigator in the case testified on the stand that he did not believe that the injuries were consistent with what the girl had said had happened. He didn't believe that they were consistent with her having been punched, that it must have been something else. And my theory is, you know, and again, none of us know actually whether Dalvin Cook struck this girl, and, you know, I certainly hope he didn't. Nobody knows exactly what happened there outside of the sober people who were actually witnessing it. But you know, basically that was the only thing that you had, along with the word of these two intoxicated girls, and that was against the word of four Florida State football players who had been hanging out together. And obviously you've got, you know, conflict of interest stuff and so on. You know, is one football player going to testify against another? I mean, obviously that's an issue, but four guys that were not intoxicated. They all testified that they'd been at the club, but that they hadn't been drinking. I'm not exactly sure whether that's true or not, but when the police responded to this and all, there's no evidence at least that these young men had been drinking. And they did, by the way, their stories had some inconsistencies, but precisely the kinds of inconsistencies that you would expect from people who had actually witnessed it and were telling the truth. That's one of the things that that is always when you're looking for people who are making something up, what you're looking for is stories that don't have any sort of discrepancies between them, between eyewitnesses. When you don't have discrepancies, that's actually a red flag that people got together and they got their story straight. In this case, that doesn't seem to be what happened. Actually, one of the funniest comments was one of the players, as I recall, is I think it was Devontae, the wide receiver, freshman wide receiver's last name slipping my mind at the moment. Basically, he when he was asked, you know, whether they got together and talked about this, or maybe it was I don't remember. It doesn't matter who it was, but one of the guys on the stand actually said, when he was asked, well, you know, did you guys talk about this incident afterwards? And he said, nah, man, we're all on the same team, but we don't talk like girls, which was a hilarious line on the stand, in, you know, under oath. But at any rate, you've got the word of those two girls and basically a split lip that the investigator says is not likely consistent with being punched in the face versus the word of four football players, and then the word of another guy who had come forward late in the process, who said, yeah, I was there, I was people watching, and, you know, here's what happened. And his story more or less corroborates what the four football players said. So, you know, obviously, again, you could, if you're on the outside and you're really cynical, you could say, well, they're all covering for each other. But the one thing you can say is that there's no way that this would ever have resulted in a conviction. There's no way that this could have ever been said that this was, that you could find with beyond a reasonable doubt that Dalvin Cook hit this young lady. So, you know, it's a case that was open and shut from the beginning. And it shouldn't have taken that long during the day. But, you know, they dragged it out and the jury did their best not to extend that. So, you know, 23 minutes before going ahead and coming out with their decision, they tried very hard to break the record for speedy decisions by a jury. The Travis Johnson, I'm sure, holds that record, but they narrowly failed. So, but at any rate, Dalvin Cook has been cleared to play at Florida State again. So Florida State now has their most proven playmaker back on the field. He did miss 3 weeks of fall practice, which, you know, is a little bit of a double-edged sword. First of all, he's going to be fresh. I mean, he's still been working out, staying in shape and all that, and he's not had to take the beating and the wear and tear that you take in camp. But at the same time, there's going to be a little bit of rust to knock off. I mean, that's part of what camp is for, is to knock off some rust and get some comfort with continuity with your offensive line and with your quarterbacks and so on. So it's going to take a little bit for him to get back into it. I don't expect for him to be the starter in the first couple games. Mario Pender has played extremely well. He did have a thigh contusion at one point in camp, but beyond that, he has run the ball extremely well. The coaching staff is very happy with how he's run, and Jaquez Patrick is also, he offers that big back in the offense. So I expect to see some Cook in those first couple games. We'll see him take some carries, but I don't expect to see him as the starter or the primary back in the first couple games, though they'll use them surely to get him more incorporated in the offense and so on. But by the Boston College game, the third game and the first game that really matters, I think he should be basically in good form. So Florida State fans have to be pleased with this verdict. Again, if you are a fan of the justice system and the way that works, then this was the right decision. Now, again, obviously, I hope, and I'm sure every person associated with the Florida State program hopes that he did not strike this girl, that that's actually what didn't happen. We can't know that. What we know is that there's no way of coming to the conclusion that that did happen, and that the evidence seems there's no evidence that he did strike this girl. So, at any rate, that's good news, like I said, for Florida State fans, and we will see Dalvin Cook and his ability as a playmaker on the field early in the season for Florida State. It'll be interesting to see how he runs. You wonder whether or not this will have him running just a little bit more of an edge, though he already ran with one. Okay, so let's go ahead and move into the second segment of the show where we're going to talk about how Florida State has wrapped up fall camp.
We're talking about practice.
And the sorts of things that we now know about Florida State coming out of camp, coming out of that second scrimmage. First things first, of course, is that quarterback battle, which is obviously the most important thing for this team. You know, the level of quarterback play is going to be critical. But as we've said all along, we're not going to hear anything specific from Jimbo Fisher about that. We've heard some things behind the scenes, but Fisher himself is not going to say anything at this point. I don't expect to hear anything before the Texas State game. I don't know that he's even going to necessarily announce a starter who's going to actually take snaps before the Texas State game. We're going to have to wait until at least then. And what he is likely to say is it doesn't really matter who takes the first snap. Both quarterbacks are going to get their reps. That's probably what we're going to see. We're probably going to see both guys take a lot of reps in the first two games. And this is partly because of Fisher's philosophy that playing quarterback is more than just putting the ball in the right place and more than just being passing and running the offense. It's about taking charge of the team. And Fisher really believes you've got to have leadership coming from the quarterback position for the team to be successful. And this is an example of why he does what, or this is why he does what he does. Basically, he wants to make sure that the team is behind whoever is actually the starting quarterback. He doesn't want to have a situation where he picks a guy, and you've got guys on the team who really aren't sure that that guy should be the starter. Fisher wants to make sure that the team believes that the guy that's taking the snaps is the best guy to be taking the snaps. So what he tries to do is he always talks about this, and to some degree it's coach speak, but to a large degree it's not, that, you know, you got to let them choose. You got to let them decide and figure out who's the guy, and somebody has to step forward and win the team over. And that's why in those first couple games, I think we're going to see both guys play, and essentially the player, the quarterback who is more efficient and leads the offense to more scoring drives and so on, the guy who looks more impressive with the lights on, that's going to be the guy that ultimately wins the job. I think at this point it's fairly clear that's going to be Everett Golson, but I don't think that that's going to be something that's going to be forced on anybody. He's going to wait until those guys have actually gotten, until there's some separation and the team really believes in one guy over another. And he will talk to some of the older players on the team on, what do you think? What's your impression of these players? What's your preference? Those conversations will happen. That's just the way that he coaches. As far as what we know about what's happened in these scrimmages, none of the quarterbacks have been especially impressive. And I know that's probably not exactly what many of the listeners of this show want to hear, but they just haven't been. You know, there isn't a Jameis Winston or even a Jacob Coker on this roster. There's some young guys that down the line could be pretty good. I mean, I think DeAndre Francois has a lot of potential, a lot of things to like about his game. I mean, he spins it better than anybody else on the roster. JJ Cosentino has all the tools, and he's making some good strides and is starting to show some flickers, but they're just not ready. So it really is Golson or McGuire, and they're splitting reps. They're each one is getting their opportunities. So far, basically, McGuire is cue Denny Green. He is who we thought he was in that sense. I mean, he is who he is. Golson, on the other hand, has been, he started behind. He's been learning the offense. He's been spotty at times. I mean, the biggest thing that I've been hearing is that, he's been having some issues with anticipation and picking some things up and being on time or ahead of time. You know, the thing that separates Jameis Winston from so many quarterbacks and that made him so great in the Jimbo Fisher offense was his ability to anticipate. He was throwing the football before most quarterbacks would recognize where to go with it. And so you can throw guys open, and it really makes a difference because you're hitting guys on the run in space. And at this point, that's just not what you have from any of the quarterbacks on the Florida State roster. McGuire lacks great anticipation, lacks good anticipation, in my opinion. Golson didn't have especially good anticipation at Notre Dame, and he's now in a new system where he doesn't even have the confidence that he had in that one. So he's a little behind in that regard. But the one thing that we have heard is that Golson has really set himself apart in terms of his poise. He is, by all reports, very poised, both in the pocket and just in general. He's shown a lot of poise when things have broken down, and that seems to be the thing that's going to separate him and distinguish him as we move forward. That's why I think Golson's going to end up winning this job, is because of his poise. He doesn't panic. He doesn't hesitate or hitch when something goes wrong. And that's basically going to be the difference. That, along with his ability to run some option stuff. And they're going to run option this year. You're going to see it with Golson. You're going to see him not just read option, but you're going to even see some triple stuff. You know, you put Kermit Whitfield in the slot and have him come around for a pitch, or, you know, the jet sweep type stuff, you know, Wildcat series stuff. You're going to see that kind of thing with Golson at quarterback this year because of the kind of weapon that he is with his feet. And that's the sort of thing, again, he brings some stuff to the table in terms of poise and in terms of the ability to make things happen when they break down that Sean McGuire just doesn't. And that's really what we're going to wind up seeing, I think. One of the other things then that we've seen so far in camp, flipping over to the next thing, is that the running game is awfully good. And that's without Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook has not taken a snap in the fall so far. And the running game, by all accounts, by the reports we're getting, they've been gashing the defense pretty good. Again, Mario Pender has had a great camp. Jaquez Patrick, you hear Fisher getting on him a little bit about running more physically, being more physical and being tougher and being more consistent and not being quite as streaky, because, you know, have a great real physical run one time and then maybe not as much the next. But that, by the reports that we've heard, is not so much because he hasn't been physical, not so much because he hasn't been impressive, but because Fisher is just trying to get that extra 5% out of him. And again, he's a freshman. You've got to learn how to keep your level of play high all the time. And that's really what Fisher's demanding. Those guys have been very good. And really the third guy, that Jonathan Vickers, has been better than I think a lot of people expected in the recruiting process. We liked him better than a lot, but, you know, another 225-pound back. He runs physically and he's a really good target out of the backfield. The running game has been very solid. And, you know, obviously Freddie Stevenson, everybody knows what you've got in him as well. The running game has been very solid. And that, of course, then means that the flip side, the major concern right now for the defense coming out of practice, coming out of fall practice, is going to be stopping the run. You've had a couple defensive tackles, Noddy and Lawrence Stample, that have separated themselves and are better options than anything that Florida State had on the field last year at the defensive tackle spot. I say that even though Eddie Goldman was really good at times, that pair should be better than any pair that Florida State had. Maybe Goldman was better overall than either of those will be individually, but Florida State didn't have a pair like that other than when Lawrence Stample was on the field early in the year, and that just didn't happen after he got hurt. So Florida State should be better at that defensive tackle spot overall, and there's been some young guys that have flashed, and you've got Mitchell for some depth there as well. But the concern really is, you know, at the linebacker spot, they lack some depth. There's some concern about whether or not they're going to be good enough stopping the run against teams like Boston College and Miami and Georgia Tech and some of these teams that are going to really force them to stop the run inside out. That's the real concern right now coming out of camp. And again, it's partly because of some holes in the roster with Matthew Thomas suspended or ineligible for the year. That's really where the concern is. And that's partially because they're going to be in dime and in nickel most of the year. And when you're in a 4-2-5 base package, and then you're, you know, in a 4-1-6 quite a bit, you're really going to have to do extra work to be good against the run, because you just don't have the girth. You don't have the bulk on the field to stop the run against those teams that are going to stack you. So they're going to have to make sure that they're comfortable with the personnel that they're going to put on the field. They're going to have good packages for when teams go bigger personnel. You know, when you're putting that third linebacker on the field, exactly how you're going to do that. As of right now, it looks like what they do is Jacob Pugh would come on as a third linebacker, sort of hybrid linebacker defensive end, along with two inside backers when they actually go into those bigger environments. But that's at this point, that's the one real concern. I think pass defense, this defense is going to be better against the pass than last year. Both corners are set. Obviously, Jalen Ramsey is going to be able to lock down his side, arguably the best corner in the country. You could argue with him or Vernon Hargreaves and also Fuller up at Virginia Tech. You know, that's really the cream of the crop, despite what Mackenzie Alexander at Clemson is saying. Those guys really are a step ahead at this point. But, you know, the biggest difference is going to be at that safety position where they've got more bodies to throw at it, and there's been some improvement there. And I think with Nate Andrews stepping down, because they've got more bodies that they trust at the safety position, that lets a kid like Nate Andrews step down into that money role a little bit more often, where he takes basically the weak side linebacker position, where Florida State doesn't have a ton of bodies anyway. When he's able to step down into the box and play that role, that means more turnovers. Because the one thing that Nate Andrews really brings to the table, he is a ball hawk. He does a great job watching quarterback's eyes. He does an excellent job reading routes. He's a very smart player. And Andrews has some of the best hands I've ever scouted. When he came out of high school, his recruiting tape was so evident how strong and good his hands were on tape. That, you know, he's a guy, he's always, anytime there's a ball around him, you're going to expect him to come up with it. So when you put him in the box, when you put him down into that sky safety position, or when he's in that money role, that's going to, or in a robber position, that's where he's going to be able to bring some turnovers to the table. And so that just by itself is going to make this team better against the pass. His ability to come down into the money role. Andrews, as a ball hawk, is going to be an important player in this defense. And again, because of Derwin James, because of the ability, because of the improvement that you've seen as 42 has gotten better and better, LaMarcus Brutus has gotten better and better. He's now a reliable role back there, a reliable safety back there in center field. Because you've got that, you've got Tyler Hunter, you've got guys that you can move around, and you can put Andrews in that money role, it's going to be a good thing for the defense. It should result in more turnovers, which Florida State's defense just didn't force a lot of them last year. And one of the other reasons for that is because there wasn't a whole lot of pass rush last year. And I don't think that's going to be the same kind of problem this year either. Again, we've heard a tremendous buzz about Josh Sweat, who his recovery from a catastrophic knee injury as a senior in high school is just remarkable. But, you know, he may well start against Texas State with Lorenzo Featherston still ailing a little bit. He may actually be the starter. Now, he may not play a ton of snaps, and they're still trying to bring him along somewhat slowly, but he may actually start. And he brings something that, I mean, he brings a level of explosiveness. This was the best defensive recruit on the edge in the country last year. There's no doubt about that. He and, you know, you could argue maybe for Trenton Thompson, you know, one of the two defensive tackles or so up at the top for top defensive player coming out in high school last year. But outside of those guys, it was Sweat. Sweat was, and you could make a case, he was the best defensive recruit in the country last year because of his explosiveness on the edge. I mean, it's almost like Clowney. He doesn't quite have Clowney's size, but it's that kind of guy. And now coming off an injury, he's not going to be quite that. He's still not quite what he would have been without that. But boy, he brings a different dimension to the defense. And as does Featherston, now that he's added some weight and as he gets healthy again after having his knee scoped. And Walker has made some strides in terms of what Lawing is asking him to do. And the thing is, Lawing is bringing a different approach to how they're going to be getting after the quarterback. I think what we're going to see is a little bit more with Sal Senseri on the defense. They pushed more toward a 3-4 kind of approach. Bring pressure from different directions, but you don't necessarily have defined pass rush guys. What you're going to see with Brad Lawing, I think, is more what you saw with Florida under Muschamp. You're going to see more true 4-man rushes where, you know, you're going to see a defensive end turn loose and let a guy just make a play. And I think that's going to be Featherston at times. That's going to be Sweat at times. Sometimes we might see Pugh in that role. Other times we're going to see Walker there, but a little bit less, I think. But just some of those things, I think that fits the personnel better. So I think we're going to see more turnovers on the defensive side, though I think we are going to, I think Florida State fans are going to be frustrated at times. We are going to see a little bit more in the way of rushing yards given up than a lot of people would like, which is going to, I think that's the potential weakness there. So that's just an update in terms of what we've, of a few things that we've heard coming out of camp as they now are working on in-season practices, though they're treating it sort of like camp. That's basically where things are. And that's going to be it for us on this version of the Unconquered podcast. Again, this is on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, in association with NoleDigest.com, bringing you all Noles all the time. Again, I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for joining us.
I made this.